The world of alcohol is a large and fascinating place. As a lifelong storyteller, I enjoy nothing more than hearing people's stories, finding out what inspired them, and really what makes them tick. This is Hudson Lindenberger, the host of Booze News, and you're listening to Roar on WGN.
Today on Booze News, we're talking about Sullivan's Cove, the Tasmanian single malt that shocked the whiskey world never looked back. With small-scale production, evolving core releases, and location-only single casks, it's become one of the most sought-after names of whiskey. I caught up with head distiller Heather Tillett to find out how patience and restraint built a global reputation. Let's dive in. Well, let's talk about the cult following. I mean, I think it's a well-earned one. You know, in 2014, you guys were the first distillery outside of Japan or Scotland to take home the coveted World's Best Single Malt title at the World Whiskey Awards, which anyone who, you know, follows whiskey knows that that's one of the premier whiskey-only focused competitions out there. And, you know, when you guys won for your 12-year-old French Oak single cask, it kind of blew everyone's mind, and especially, you know, when they started digging into, like, Sullivan's Cove, who is Sullivan Cove? And then you find out that Sullivan's Cove is this distillery tucked into outside of Hobart, Tasmania. So it's not even on the mainland of Australia. And I think people were just like, and am I correct in that it was such a shocking win that the people from the World Whiskey Awards traveled to the distillery to see it because they just were like, say what?
Yeah, it was actually some folks from the Scotch Whiskey Producers Association. And yeah, it raised questions. It shook people's understanding of what is whiskey, what is single malt whiskey, who can make it, where can it be made. Actually, really, really was kind of a fundamental shakeup, and that's great. It was a huge win, and it was quite seismic in that perspective. You know, up until around that point, you know, Scotch and single malt whiskey or whiskey, very synonymous terms. You know, you make the comment, oh, I just have a Scotch. I'll have a Scotch, please. Oh, I feel like a Scotch. But, you know, the whiskey doesn't have to be made in Scotland. And Scotland, of course, has founded the tradition of single malt whiskey and whiskey creation and set the standard in a fantastic way and is a huge, huge industry for very, very good reason. But ultimately, whiskey, the umbrella term of what whiskey is a spirit derived from a grain that's then aged in barrels. Timber barrels for a certain amount of time, depending on where you are, the jurisdiction that you're in. Single malt whiskey, of course, is that next layer of nuance, that next niche where, you know, you need to be doing pot distillation. It needs to be the product of one distillery, so you're not trading spirits or blending. And it needs to be based on malted barley, so there's only one grain. It must be malted. So, you know, all of a sudden you've got people thinking, well, hang on, actually, like, it can be made anywhere. You don't have to be in a particular region. You know, we can make it anywhere, and maybe we should be making it anywhere and seeing what does whiskey made in this part of the world and this part of the world and this part of the world look like? Because when we make a product in a place, it represents that place to varying degrees, depending on how we make the product and how strong our interventions are. But it's reflecting a place, the people in the place and that time. So all of a sudden, I think people really started having light bulb moments and thinking, well, hey, why don't I do that here? It's so, so exciting. We've got this wave of world whiskey that's come in the last decade. And, of course, you know, you've got your Cavalans. Japan has been making amazing whiskey for many, many, many decades, not to mention Ireland and America, you know, the key kind of whiskey-producing regions. But now, you know, there's a distillery in Vietnam that's making single malt whiskey. And it really shook people up. I mean, with the distillery here in Tasmania, where this sweet little unassuming place and business of people who are genuinely just passionate about creating really delicious whiskey and seeing what are the possibilities here in Tasmania. Let's make the best whiskey we can here. Well, it turns out it is pretty great. It's surprisingly
great. Well, it's obvious. It's obviously pretty great. I mean, you guys followed up, what, in 2018 and 19, didn't you? Where you took home the world's best cask single malt, which, you know, it kind of even added, like, it wasn't a one-time, oh, that's well, it. These guys won, they must have done great. But since, you know, those two more.
I think that showed for me when we took those home, I just was like, yeah, no, that's telling the world that's tenure. We're here to stay. We've got a philosophy that is constant, and a creative philosophy and an approach, and we're putting out consistently quality product, and the world has recognised that. Our industry has recognised that. It wasn't a fluke. And, I wouldn't blame people for thinking the first award was a fluke, right? It's a little unassuming, small, very, very small. I mean, we're talking micro scale compared to many distilleries in a part of the world that most have never heard of. How on earth does that happen?
You're mistaken. Most of the world has heard of Tasmania because of the Tasmanian devil. That's the extent
actually,
of what they
you're
know.
Right. That is correct. Tassie devil. That's right.
Everyone knows Tasmania purely because of Looney Tunes cartoons and the Tasmanian devil.
That's true, Looney Tunes.
But if you threw a map up on the world and said, show me where Tasmania is, you would have, out of 100 people, you'd probably have 100 fingers pointed in different parts of the map.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a nice part of the world to make whiskey. I think that the philosophy of creation of our whiskey through the now 30, 31, 32-year-old distillery life has been the same. You know, we've had a slow approach, an unrushed approach, one of patience and restraint, and working with the local barley, and really exploring the landscape of flavour potential within our place and with our ingredients. And I guess maybe because we're not a big player, we're a wonderful little craft distillery way down south, that we do dance to the beat of our own drum, and are quite proud to do so. So it was a big win, that first one. That really, it went a long way to shaking up a global conversation that had kind of been happening. People around the various corners of the world were kind of playing with distillation and making whiskey, and it really just threw the match on the pile of fuel, that's for sure.
Well, and I think that one of the things you said that I completely agree with was it's opened everyone's eyes to, we can make great whiskey. We can always honor the traditional places, but we can make great whiskey in other places and great single malts. In America, a couple of years ago, American single malt became an actual official category. And it's
fantastic single malts coming from America.
And it's a slow mover, but it's getting there to where it's getting. Mm. But in America, we're a huge country, have lots of resources. A lot of parts of the rest of the world are big. Tassie is really, really small. What makes Tasmania? Because one of the things I really saw and was shocked, and really not shocked, but just blown away by from my 2 weeks in Tasmania, was besides the fact that it's a stunningly beautiful country, the food and produce was amazing. I mean, I ate more but good meals there than I had, and I had incredible wines. But what is it about Tasmania that really sets it up to make good whiskey? Because making good whiskey, there has to be a couple certain things there. What is it that kind of set it up that, you guys can make good whiskey out of there?
Well, I think that there's the really foundational pieces, the nuts and bolts stuff. We've got a fantastic climate for maturing the casks long term. It's a cool temperate climate, which means that, comparison to the bulk of the mainland of Australia, temperatures are, on average, are much cooler. And we don't get as great a diurnal swings as, many parts of Australia do. So we don't have those huge swinging extremes. It's generally cool, which means the evaporative losses that many of our friends in mainland Australian distilleries have just don't happen down here. I mean, I think it's year on year, it's 4% evaporation, whereas there are many parts of Australia that it's upwards of 8%. And so even just basic maths tells you you're going to have some challenges and you're going to have to be innovative in how you work with the maturation. But in Tassie, it's really quite a pleasure working with the climate in maturation, but also Tasmania has been growing fantastic barley for a very long time, a couple hundred years. And, Tasmania has been home to some of Australia's oldest and most respected breweries. I mean, Cascades and Bogues, great examples. So we've got this brewing expertise in this state that is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and that the founders and the early creators at Sullivan's Cove and other distilleries in Tasmania, of course, really, really relied on that and learned so much from our brewing friends. And so, interestingly, much at Sullivan's, much of our brewing process has been influenced by beer brewers, not necessarily brewers for distilling. And so we're using classic, you know, strains of barley that typically we use for brewing. We're using typical brewing techniques for beer, not your classic, just, you know, ferment it, get the yield and distill it approach. So as a result, we have slower approach to how we ferment and, you know, do those real flavor foundation building pieces before the distillation. And I really put that down to our early origins in that space, you know, utilizing the knowledge and the ingredients that were here in this place, coupled with that climate.
It also probably helped that your original founder, instead of buying traditional distilling equipment, bought a cognac distiller, which you guys use. So, it's one of the beauties of, A, people that are getting in the industry that don't have a history in it. They tend to kind of start new pathways and try things differently. But it's also something that I'm finding the more and more, and you see it oftentimes in more remote parts of the world. Iceland's one, places I've been to, that when you're Tasmania, especially New Zealand, Australia point, you're kind of down there. It takes a while to get there. So there's kind of built into the DNA of every one of these places that we're just going to try something different. You know, we'll just do it this way. And there is no one to say you shouldn't do it this way. They're like, you know what? It is what it is. Why not?
That's it. And you know what? There's also this added layer of resourcefulness, because you are an extra flight. You are an extra boat transit away from everywhere. I mean, Tasmania, I think we've got, I have to look at the current population, but it's just over 500,000 people.
Yeah.
So we don't have access to the wealth of resources that, say, Melbourne or Sydney or the mainland centres would. So there is just this added layer of resourcefulness and innovation as well. It's an inadvertent innovative mindset. And, you know, our origin story is the classic example of this. And you just touched on it briefly. I mean, Rob, our founder, he wasn't a whiskey man. He wasn't a drinks man. He's an entrepreneur and a very creative entrepreneur. And he actually was in Japan. This is back in the 90s. He was in Japan on a business trip and he saw in a restaurant Japanese businessmen drinking Japanese single malt with intention with local seafood. In particular, I think it was abalone. And he realized that food pair thing was quite a thing there, and they were doing it with intention. It was delicious. It worked really well. And he thought, well, hang on a second. We could do that in Tasmania. We have fantastic seafood, and look, our food and that inadvertent Epicurean mindset is a really typically Tasmanian piece. And that's already in Tasmania. He thought, well, how about we make whiskey? He'd been thinking about making a brewery at the start, like founding a brewery down here, and he thought, no, we'll go the next step and distill it and make whiskey. And we'll do it with the intention of having a food pair with local produce. And I think that is such an interesting founding story. And it has set us apart from the very beginning, because you've got someone who isn't from the drinks industry. He doesn't have that experience. And so, you know, he's looking at things from a different perspective, seeing it in a different light. He's got a different vision. And that, I think, is one of our greatest strengths and has set us up on a pathway of just looking at things differently the whole way through. And that's, you know, the base of innovation is creativity and looking at things from a different way. And then the innovation part is then taking those kind of creative visions and making them happen. And he did it.
He founded in 1994, you guys were founded.
Right.
And it wasn't until 2014 that, you know, you won your big award.
It's a long game.
I mean, that's
a long game. Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of the beauty of it. It was, you know, you're from day one, you guys have been focused on just low and slow, take our time,
right.
don't rush. And I think, look, part of that is the insulation of being in Tasmania is you're like, we're going to do it on our own pace. Yeah. You know, you're not a distillery in the middle of some huge populated area where you're like, we got to get our liquid out. We got to move quick.
That's right.
We don't
That's
do
exactly
this
right.
for trouble.
And, you know, there's been a few ownership periods. And I mean, when it passed into the second ownership and management period, you know, and beyond, it has been passion driven. You know, many of the owners, it was their side hustle in a way. It was their passion project. And I love that. It means that there is that insulation from, you know, being driven beyond maintaining that heart and soul of a patient and a restrained philosophy. And, I just find it so interesting and curious. And I always remind myself, like, that's who we are. Like, you know, from a liquid creation perspective, you know, inadvertently, we look at things a different way. It was set up from the beginning with Rob's vision. And then, as you mentioned, you know, he didn't go and buy a classic whiskey still, like from Scotland he had seen a in an old book. Goodness knows where he got the book from, but he saw it in an old book. These beautiful photos of Charente Alembic stills, which, you know, the typical stills using cognac to create cognac brandy. And he thought, they are stunning. It's what we're going to use. It's what you do. It's not actually what you do typically, and I think that's the coolest part. As a result, we've got a really unique spirit. It's quite oily, very, very viscous. And then, you know, we due to how we ferment and then distill and age, you know, that's accentuated. So he gave us our unique profile from the beginning, possibly without even really realizing the extent of it, which is so cool.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I think is quite interesting about you guys is, you know, you don't distill just to keep refilling one brand line. You don't try to make everything the same. It's always about each release is different. You know, on each of your bottles, there's a prominent sticker that tells which batch it is. So people know that, look, I love this certain, you know, Sullivan's Cove American X bourbon cask. I love that. But you know, if I get one bottling to the next, it can change. And that's partially from your all's mentality of, look, we're going to release when we're ready. We're going to put it out. Each one's going to be different. We're not trying to create the exact same flavor over and over. Instead, we're just on this kind of general pathway. And what we release is what we release and what we think is good.
That's right. And we're certainly not a cookie cutter manufacturer. No. It's just not the space that we dance in. And you know, we strive for consistency. I guess our definition of consistency isn't that it is the liquid is exactly the same every single time. It's recognizable. The glass isn't even right beneath your nose when you know that Sullivan's, you know, but that consistency of fantastic texture, you know, it's, you know, it grips onto your palate, but it slips across the tongue, full bodied. You know, there's multiple layers, layers and layers and layers of complexity and interest, you know, a narrative that flows throughout the experience of the whiskey, you know, really bold, malty notes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's a very distinctive Sullivan's spirit that's quite recognizable. And we can work with consistency, you know, in the double cask, for example, in our one key vatted expression. There is a recipe, but there's little bits of room for movement in, you know, in each batch, and I really like that. And because they're crafted, all of our batches are crafted, and we're working with each cask, each individual single cask, whether it's released as an individual single cask or married with portions of other casks. We're working with single casks to really highlight it at its best self. And for sometimes it's not that they're faulted, they might just not be as complex. And, you know, by marrying a bunch of casks that just don't have that extra level of complexity that you would get in a single cask bottling, you create the complexity. You can create the flavour and the texture and that Sullivan's experience. And it's a fantastic way of operating. It's laborsome. It takes time, you know, that the detail and the time to put the vattings together and to work with each cask over years is huge, but it's deeply rewarding.
Yeah. Well, it's also nice not to be like, all right, listen, you know, we have to get more American oak second fills out, so we're just going to start bottling this. And it's like, look, if we run a gap in the distribution, we run a gap right now. But, you know, we're going to wait. When it is ready, it'll be released. And I think it takes a lot of strength of will to say, not to give in to, listen, we have to put this out immediately. It's like, no, we're not ready. We're going to check it in another month and we'll see.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, in a way, it is, it's almost seasonal. You know, if you think about seasonal produce, you know, if you, you know, we're shopping at the local farmers markets, you don't have bananas all year round. You don't have apples all year round. But at every part of the year, there's going to be things that are in season. And you know that and you trust that. And it's a beautiful thing. It means that the produce is the best it gets when you're eating in season. And it's kind of like that. We're letting the liquid tell us. We're letting the whiskey tell us when it is ready. And we're working with that. Those the casks on a minimal intervention basis. You know, we do things along the way here and there if they need it, but we're much more interested in listening to what the whiskey needs to be its best self and not getting in the way. Great advice I was given by a winemaker years and years ago. The best winemakers get out of the way.
Well, speaking of winemakers, so, you know, your story is interesting. You know, you were a winemaker training, you know, you were a fully certified winemaker, you were making wines, and the story goes that you went to a whiskey tasting just on an offhanded chance at Sullivan's Cove and thinking, sure, I'll go, let's go try some whiskey. And if I'm correct, weren't you just so blown away by the whiskey at Sullivan's Cove that it kind of triggered a whole shift in your whole career?
Completely. Yeah, look, I had been a winemaker in training for a few years and had absolutely loved the wine industry. Had a great time being part, particularly of a winery down the south coast of New South Wales, and you know, everything from vintage through to sales, and absolutely adored it and was enamored in the wine world and was excited for that to continue upon a move to Tasmania. Of course, Tasmania has some fantastic wines. Some of Australia's best are produced down here.
They absolutely do. Yeah. I was shocked. And the fact that, just like you guys, I mean, almost all the Tasmanian wine never leaves Tasmania. And to anyone listening to this, go to Tasmania just to drink the wine, because it's ridiculously good wine. But yes,
it is. And look, an amazing climate for winemaking, amazing terroir. So yeah, I was really like, this is great. Moving to Tasmania, hello, the rest of my life wine career. And yeah, it got sidetracked because I had heard local people in Tasmania talking about whiskey very much in an Epicurean sense, you know, in that farmer's market versus commercial huge scale sense, you know. I thought, gee, that's interesting. Tasmanians are passionate about local produce. The farmer's markets here are incredible. Even just the produce in the regular grocery stores is just, there's a next level there. It's fantastic.
I completely agree. It was so,
so good.
It reminded me of France. It was that good.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was hearing people talk about whiskey in that sense, and I had never heard whiskey being spoken about in an Epicurean sense ever. Quite the opposite, you know. And so this definitely sparked an interest because I love food and flavor and all of the things. So I started investigating and I visited a distillery or two and ended up at Sullivan's one Friday afternoon and did a tasting and mind was blown. I just was lost for words. Just thought, I really need to rethink my position on whiskey here. And I saw Myrtle, our still, our original still, just through the windows. And I thought it was inadvertently, it was actually exactly what Rob did when he saw the old cognac still photos in the book, however, 20 years before. And I saw Myrtle through the windows and thought, that's the most beautiful thing I've seen in my life. And that's what I want. That's it. Kind of just had this thing of like, that's it. That's the direction. Certainly haven't lost my passion for winemaking and for wine and the wonderful medium that it is. But it's, very quickly shifted to whiskey. And the way the cookie crumbled, I ended up having a full-time job at Sullivan's a week later. I've been there ever since. That was 10 years ago. Yeah.
That I would say the cookie crumbled quite well. I mean, it's
crumbled quickly.
You go to the tasting, and within a week you're working there, and it's like your family must have been like, "What? Whiskey? No. How much? Years doing wine? No."
Well, they were just quite intrigued, I think. Well, what's next in the Heather story? How fun! So yeah, but interestingly, I mean, in 10 days' time, it's my 10th anniversary at Sullivan's. So that's pretty awesome. It feels good.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I don't know where the time's gone. Time flies when you're having fun, I think.
Well, and they kind of gave you an early birthday gift because you guys, when did you complete your expansion?
A year ago.
So you're coming up on your 10-year anniversary. You have a much larger distillery to play with. You have two new stills to work with.
Right.
But what I find great is that instead of just saying, all right, we have this whole new distillery, we're going to massively ramp up production. Instead, it's like, no, we're pretty much going to continue. We're just going to quit distilling 24/7 and give people a life. And we're just going to go to a normal existence here.
Yeah. I mean, aforementioned Myrtle. And of course, you know, it's a thing around the world that all stills have names, but you get quite connected and passionate about your still. So we all refer to Myrtle very affectionately. So Myrtle, one still doing all of the distillation, you know, 7 days a week piece. Stills need work, like any piece of machinery, they need maintenance, preventative maintenance and lots of it. And the thing about still that's really, really interesting, they're copper. And the copper wears thin over the years because it's a reactive surface. It's actually part of the whiskey flavor creation process and it ends up wearing thin over the years. And so you have to replace components. And we've been doing that with Myrtle for years on and off, but kind of got to the point where we're like, yeah, look, she's the best part of 30 years old. We need to send her on a holiday, and you know, she can put her feet up and have a pina colada, and we can give her a nip tuck, and we can need to revamp the site. So yeah, it was time. It made all the sense in the world. When you think about, you know, we produce very, very low volumes if you consider total compared to the rest of the globe. I mean, we've been producing 70 or 80,000 liters of pure alcohol per year, 15 years or something, and not much more than that at any other time. So, you know, when you consider that some of the majors in Scotland are producing multiple billion liters of alcohol a year, it kind of puts it in perspective. But, you know, in a small operation like ours, one still doing that over 7 days a week is, you know, it's not the best manufacturing in that you don't have time for maintenance should things go wrong. You need to put that time in. You want to have your people having a weekend and having a break and having better hours, and you want to have the capability to play, capability to experiment and really dive into that as well as producing your core product consistently. So for all the reasons it makes sense, we want to increase our capacity, majorly increase our capability for doing things more efficiently and doing them our way as well, which takes a bit more time. Yeah, it just made all the sense in the world. The site needed a bit of a facelift, and it was great. So the site that you visited, we're all really proud of. I mean, the visitor experience space is beautiful. Our friends in the VizX, they've just got our teammates there have the best space, and, you know, it overlooks the stills, the distillation area. And us, when we're in the distillation area, we look into this VizX space, which is warm. It's so nice seeing people in there, and it's great. It's really important for us in production to be part of that aspect of the business too, because so many businesses, you know, you see it, people make it, and then these other people over here sell it, and never the twain really meet. What's awesome about Sullivan's is they do. The tour, if you come and visit us here, you know, you're in this beautiful VizX space, lounge area, bar, etc., and you walk through the production areas and you can look back on the visitor experience space. So it's they're intimately involved, and that was something we've always had at the distillery and wanted to maintain and recreate and make even more better, you know, make it more intimate and really, really lovely experience. So that's worked so fantastically, and yeah.
It was a beautiful facility, your, you know, tasting experience. But what was really great was, look, you only produce, I think, was it 20,000 bottles a year, and 90% of that it's Australia. So, like, if I want to try it, like, if I'm someone who's like, I really want to go try this, you got to kind of come here, because you got to come to Tasmania. You could come to Australia where you sell 90%, you'll find it. But even there, it might be a little tough to do it. It's going to be probably heavily marked up. So you can come to the taste experience. You can walk. You can see it. But then you can go in and, I mean, look, I had a ball. I did tasted all of them. I tasted, you know, your four main expressions. And then they started pulling me some other bottles out. I tasted the 25 years, which were ridiculous. Yeah. But, like, I saw sitting around me was, you know, four or five groups of people. And they all were like kids in a candy store. Because if you're a whiskey lover, look, A, you're already in Tasmania, which is fantastic. But B, you're tasting this really fantastic liquid that you're not going to be able to go home and say, hey, we should go to the bar and get some Sullivan's Cove. It might be there, but it's not going to be the easiest thing in the world. So I think it's a wonderful experience.
Yeah, there's a pilgrimage element there as well. And look, of course, we do have a very small presence internationally. And, you know, as we have the liquid coming on board that was produced 10 or 15 years ago, and they did increase production a little bit. So you see a little bit more become available, but honestly, it's not enormous. The volumes that Sullivan's produce are not enormous and never will be. That's okay. But yeah, I guess that Epicurean piece comes through, because, you know, so much about that approach and that philosophy is that it's simple and there's not a whole lot of it, but you savor it. And it's that savouring in a moment where, you know, you just sit there with the glass or the plate of food or whatever it is, that beautiful thing from a place that only that place can make. And you're immersed. You know, time is held at ransom and held at bay for a moment or two or 10 or 30. And you're just there in a moment, in a place. And it's a wonderful thing. There's a beautiful simplicity of it. And I find it so interesting to think about, because what we do, if you really get high level, and sum it up, it's pretty simple. You're making whiskey. You know, you can make it as simple as that, but it's very complex as well. It's really, really complex. And so you can balance both. And so really what we're doing is doing lots of complex things that ultimately is not that. It's we're making whiskey, right? It's a simple thing with complexities. But what we're doing is we're seeking the profound in the simple. Found things at those moments where you just stop. The world ceases to, it's over there somewhere. That world is over there somewhere, not here in this moment. You're just with this sensory experience, and it's beautiful. And you can share it with people. You can be immersed in a place and a space, and it's fantastic. So to be able to create something with that level of soul that can transport people is kind of an honor, you know. It's really amazing.
Well, and I experienced something just like that at another place just up the road from you, Tollpuddle Vineyard. Yeah. So Tollpuddle, you know, they, what was it, 2 years ago, they were named the best white wine in the world, and suddenly everyone's starting to discover them.
Stunning.
Oh, I mean, and they're only on 30 hectares. They've already said, we will never expand beyond this. This is all we have. They just opened their cellar door, which they never had one, so you couldn't even go there to taste. And, you know, you go there, and all they're doing is making Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. They refuse to do anything else. And I tried the 2023, which had just won the award. And they were telling me, they're like, our 2024 is even better. Like, it's even taking more awards, and we really think it. And I tasted it, and I was like, I mean, this is, and I'm a big white wine fan. I was like, this is some of the best Chardonnay I've ever had in my life. Their Pinot was blow me away good. But all they had at the tasting, it was just four, and that's it. Anything else? Like, nope, we're not doing anything else. So it was kind of that same mentality that we're producing something really special, and it's the same gig. If you really want to go find Tollpuddle wines, you can find them out there. You can bump into them in restaurants, but they're only producing a small amount too. You got to kind of travel to the motherland.
That's exactly right. And I love that they own the simplicity. I'm not trying to do everything. I'm not trying to have 20 different varietals of wine, you know, 50 different SKUs of label and product. They know what they do well, and they hang their hat on that, and they say, this is who we are. This is what we do. This is how we do it. This is why we do it. This is where we do it. This is us. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. It's really easy to get taken up with, oh, I saw what they were doing over there. I better do that too. Or, oh, I've got to do that. And all of a sudden, you know, you can lose you can get dilute who you are and your identity. As not only as a creator and the philosophy of creation, but also your brand. So I think that so much about patience and restraint in creating is about knowing why you do it and who you are, understanding your DNA. And I mean, with these site upgrades we did a couple of years ago, like the largest body of work and the body of work that founded those site upgrades was the honing of our DNA, understanding our DNA that happened before, and that went on for 4 or 5 years beforehand. It was really a wonderful process of investigating and getting down in the detail and saying, who are we? From a whiskey perspective, who are we? You know, why do we do what we do? What has worked in the past? What's really, really been great examples of showing our intention and expressing Sullivan's and that thing that Sullivan's, but what is that thing? And how do we not only keep doing that, but really play to that and blow that up and own it. And we don't have to do everything. That's not who we are. We don't need to. We just need to own our space. And that slow, intentional, restrained, patient, caring, nurturing space, that's where we play. And, you know, it works really, really well in Tasmania. It makes sense. We're generally a community in Tasmania that care about food, care about gastronomy, care about wine and produce and growing things from the land and creating and playing with flavour and owning it. And, you know, this kind of maritime Epicurean approach, if you were, it sits really well with us because that's actually what the original vision of Rob, our founder, was. So, yeah, I think it's come together very, very well. And, I think our site upgrades was a great example of, we've actually physically got to do some work to the site, but take the opportunity to really define our DNA so we can step forward into a new era.
So, you know, you guys have, you know, you have your four core, which you put out, which is, you know, the French oak, the American oak, the double cask, and I'm missing one. Which one am I missing?
Old and rare.
There you go. Well, in old and rare. So, while I was there, I tasted several. What's your favorite? Because, I can tell you the one I tasted, which was mine, but what, I mean, you have all these beautiful, besides, your single malts that you put out continually, you also have a ton of single barrels that you put out. You have your old and rares. You sit down after work, and if you didn't have to think about, we only have X bottles, what's the one that you reach for?
Well, it is a really hard question because of the nature of how we create, and you do get to know individual barrels and you kind of personify them
Mm-hmm.
and individual batches, and you kind of know, well, that was a bit more that flavor and that was had a little bit more element of this, and so it is quite hard to pick favorites. However, there's a bottle there in the visitor experience lounge at the moment, HH516. There's a cask I'll never forget. It's quite old. I think it's 16 or 17 years old. It's a French Octorni, and it's just an intense explosion of flavor, and the complexity is non-comparable. It is remarkable, and it really represents an era of Australian tawny production as well. I mean, that cask, the physical barrel, had been used in the Australian tawny industry for 50 or 60 years.
Okay.
It's not a seasoned cask. It has been saturated with Australian tawny for decades, and yeah, it really comes out through the whiskey. So that's a long-standing favorite. And there's always casks that bring a twinkle to your eye. But a double cask, I love. I love the product. I love the liquid. I love making it. We did it almost 2 years ago now. But for last year, we had a 30th anniversary, and so we did a commemorative release, and that was a wonderful batch. Took liquid from all 3 decades of our history and married them together. It was just fantastic. You're really highlighting that thick body, thick, unctuous body with, these gorgeous fruity little riffs.
It's funny that that's the one that you like. The one I loved, I just loved. I had the 25-year-olds, which were quite lovely, which are the oldest single
Of
malts
course. Yeah,
ever been
they're quite
released in
remarkable.
Australia. But the one that really blew me away was the 17-year-old in American Oak. I loved it. And that, if I'm correct, that's a tawny barrel refill too. And I like a little bit of a sweeter whiskey, so it was a delight.
Fantastic.
I mean, I enjoyed every single sip of it. And if they had not been paying so much attention, that bottle that they were tasting, you might have disappeared. They would have turned around. Of course, would have sounded what you're talking about. But boy, that was a beautiful whiskey.
And I the power that something so simple as 15 or 30 mils of liquid in a glass. And that's what I mean by how simple it is. If you just step back, take the romance out, that's what it is. But it's not. It's so much more than that. It can stop time for you. Your understanding of us being as human beings in the context of time disappears. It disappears. You're somewhere else. The power of that liquid is just incredible. So it's not just a liquid.
I agree.
It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful art medium.
Well, I could sit here and talk whiskey for you all day, but I know that
Me too.
that you're a bit of a busy person, and I'd rather sit and talk whiskey while we were sipping it. But I just want to
That's
tell
true.
you, I really appreciate you taking the time to jump on here with me because it was a wonderful conversation, and as I said several times in this conversation, blown away. I mean, well done. Fantastic whiskey you guys are making down
Thanks,
there.
Hudson. Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to spend time with you, and I look forward to next time.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Ace, you too.